Well, did you see in the media last week, April 26th, Thursday, there was a big build-up. They had the McLuhan Awards for Excellence in Education, all right? Much publicity given to Marsha McLuhan's daughter, Mary. She organized the awards. Well, as usual, Bob is organizing something like that behind the scenes because it's a holy office of Club 22, right? So my buddy wrote the introductory speech by Mary McLuhan while Honorable Prime Minister Brian Mulroney stood in the wings, ready to acknowledge the McLuhan Awards. Now, this is another sign. This makes the pseudo-exes beside me collapse on the table and giggling
too much.
Just too much. So, what we can know that we've heard about slightly, like Mike knew about the McLuhan Awards, but he doesn't know what I'm going to say. The point is, as Mr. Mulroney stood in the wings, Mary spewed out the speech that my colleague, very close colleague and business partner, wrote. And where is it? All right, could you just...
As is Bob's finding, you'll note that as Brian's speaking, when he's lying, he lowers his voice.
Now, here's the important thing. Here is what Mary McLuhan opened the speech with. She said, Marsha McLuhan... Da 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 da, ba 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 ba, something else, and then she said, and he is still ahead of us. In other words, she said something like, Marsha McLuhan is an increasingly understandable figure today, but the world has not caught up to him. And then she went into this quote, and this stunned Mr. Mulroney. Now, this quote comes from April 17th, 1970, 20 years ago.
When I was in chair in college, Marsha McLuhan was just the rage in the 70s.
In 1970?
In the 70s, right through the 70s.
Well,
McLuhan was taking over chair in college.
Yeah, through his brother, Morris McLuhan. The thing is that he was a rage still in Toronto, but he had been suppressed by the Bilderbergers and the Rockefellers through most of the 70s. But you being a younger person in school, getting the cultural lag as content, right? But here's the thing. The question in April 17, 1970, put to Marshall was, is it possible for Russia to resist the electronic age, the age of instantaneous information? Or is it possible for Russia to admit it, to let the environment come in and manipulate it? And Marshall said, it is impossible for Russia to bypass the electronic age. And then he supplemented that by saying, electrotechnics scrapped the Westerner's industrial technology and retrieved and flooded him with the primitive modes of awareness of pre-literate man. That's why they're giving all that land to the Canadian Indians. I mean, preliterate man is a figure now, and the new ground, therefore, hypnotizes us. Couldn't have done that back in Custer's day, back in visual space days. Nobody would have listened to the Indians then, right? They were part of the ground. That is, okay, he's talking about the flooding of modern man with the primitive modes of awareness of preliterate man. That is why all bureaucracies of all sovereign and national entities have collapsed in the West. It is the speed-up of information by telephone and telex, etc., that destroys bureaucracies regardless of geography or ideology. And then he says, China and Russia, as much as France and the USA, will experience this collapse at the same time. Now, Mary McLuhan read that quote in her introductory remarks to the assembled 1,300 people there, the corporate media elite of Toronto, there to acknowledge Marsha McLuhan, one of Bob's holy offices. Can you deny that Bob is having an influence? Of course, that's not the real Marsha McLuhan they're hoiking up. But the point is, when Brian Mulroney came out to give his governmental acknowledgement in a time of low ratings to Marsha McLuhan, he said, you know, Mary, I was very impressed with that quote you read from 20 years ago. It makes Marshall sound almost prophetic. I think I will begin to look into what he had written and said. I'm impressed. That's what Brian Mulroney said, April 26th. And so when are they going to have the acknowledgement of Lyndon LaRouche by Brian Mulroney?
After lunch.
Or May Brussel or Dr. Beter or Herbert W. Armstrong or Frank Zappa or Cosmic Awareness or Sherman Skolnick or Finnegan's Wake leading and Garrett Dean and then leading up via Jim Patterson's remarkable third album of Bob. Via that message, leading to Bob himself, the acknowledgement of Bob will be when the art strike will be over and we can start making art again when Bob's in media control. Is that right, Colin? You got that, Colin?
Yeah.
You feel the slack, Colin, of the discarnate state? We're not numb, are we? Who gave you that numb? Who gave you that name? Numb. Numb. Number.
Yeah.
Numbers, intoxication. Pythagorean. Right?
Yeah.
Tactile space visualized as number.
So my son is a television.
You listened to the show 2 weeks ago. Right? Or maybe a month ago. Yeah, yeah, the TV guide, first week of June, 1968, Salvador Dali, put the telephone, or the television. Now, here I was re-listening to the archives, my secretary pointed out to me. I didn't explain exactly, I think, the cover caller. The cover has the thumbnail as TV screens, two thumbnails having the interval. Two creates a emotion of multitude, parallel forms, all right? But they're sitting on tacks. I forgot to mention that. The fact they're sitting on tacks is the pun on tactile. So your thumb is tactile. Well, all your fingers are.
And the sun is running on a 22-year cycle.
Hear this? Hear that fact?
You're solar.
Yeah. Yeah. How'd you know that?
Huh?
Did you notice that
our
earlier caller talked about the billion-dollar drug business, 122, right? That's a very important number. Did you know that John Kennedy raped the ballot boxes in 1960 and won the election over Vice President Nixon? And he won by 122,000 ballots. I mean, this 22 thing shows up often, doesn't it?
Mm.
What do you make of that, caller?
It's just part of the being in a solar world.
Yeah. That's right. That's dogma. Can you say a little more? Sure.
It's life in the solar theater, and the lunar sub theater.
Yeah, that's right. See, it's cyclical as well as simultaneous. In other words, the cyclical pattern will repeat 22, but it is always 22 through history, simultaneously, as we go through the evolutionary spiral cycling at the same time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
See, this is why you can be more than one person, because you are a schizophrenic anyways, and then you become a quadrophenic or tetrad process under electric TV conditions. So you can be at least four people. You can be that, and you will be well-funded for doing it. Now, you know, caller, did you know that I had a press conference with the Axis April 19th, Bob's number?
Yeah, you mentioned that.
Well, I just want to tell the audience that we have some... Yeah, you remember that. Well, I just want to tell you that I have some amazing information from them, and I just hope that we can all sort of plea bargain with Kent that he can give us an hour in the future of his precious airtime.
And space. We need space.
Yeah. We couldn't do it on Mike's show. Mike only prefers, short little tape messages. But I think if we have many people barrage Kent with request calls that they want to hear Bob's Exodus press conference, I think it would be mandatory that every artist in Toronto listen to it. And that's every one of us, right? Because everybody's an artist under electric conditions.
I'll be awake, won't you?
Yeah. So bombard Kent with request to play Bob's Exodus press conference where the 90s is explained in a way that never got explained at the 90s press conference that the public went to on April 11th. Here comes Kent. Maybe we can get his assessment now.
We're ready.
You're ready, Kent?
What?
Would you like?
I just hear my name being mellowed. I'm trying to pick out some music for.
Okay. They'll call you about this. Don't worry about it. The callers will be calling.
We'll call back.
Yeah, I'm really getting bored. Can we move on?
Yeah. Now, see, this is Mike. This is what our caller.
Okay. Thanks, caller.
Our original message was Mikey. Was about Mikey and Mikey rule.
But this is because you've got people listening. People are bored because it's just you talk to people and they can't relate to what you're saying to Kent. And listeners don't understand what's going on.
Hey, man, that's because the content is not the medium.
Well, the content is rubbish. So
right.
We just had a caller, we lost the caller.
The message is the medium, Mike.
Isn't the content the intent?
I think the caller is important, and you're neglecting the callers.
You're right, Mike. I agree completely. Thanks for hanging up.
Because you just spent 30 minutes with that caller, and that was a waste of time.
Yeah, but that's your opinion, Mike. It just sort of rules because you're Mikey. Doesn't rule?
No.
Okay. Let's have a vote. Let's take a vote on that. As a theme, Mike, did we waste 30 minutes? No?
Content's not intent. I'm going to go run and get my pup tent.
See, look, we got callers. We got a vote.
That's right. We had callers before, and they were being held up because we weren't talking about anything.
Well, we talked about a lot. The Marshall McLuhan thing, the Mulroney fact. The 22 fact, there's important themes, Mike.
Okay, Bob.
It's all part of the cartoon.
Okay.
You did not mention that the Pseudo-Exus recently celebrated its 22nd 100th birthday.
Yeah, yeah.
So can we have a quick one for that?
We always get into a certain kind of atmosphere when the Pseudo-Exus are around. You know, so we get into, kind of... Mike, are you going to take the call or did they hang up?
Of course they hung up.
Mike wouldn't take the call.
Jeez. Could have been John Scott.
Well, I think he wants to talk about Art Strike.
No, I don't. Just keep going, Bob.
Oh, okay. Well, I do want to point this out, that Gerald Bull was in the news, and one of our callers mentioned the fact he died on March 22nd and said he should have been listening to our show that night. I don't think we had a show March 22nd. I think George is referring to February 22nd. I'd like to take this call, Mike.
Okay.
Then I'll go into George Bull. Hard facts. Go ahead, caller.
Hi, Mike. Mike, why is it that you're always giving the left a hard time? This radio is on the left end of the dial. We support you. We're keeping you in power. We have money.
Yeah.
We have money.
And should they cut you off?
Sorry.
Did you just get cut off? You sound like the person got cut off.
Yeah.
Yeah, you want to address...
I want to hear more about Lyndon LaRouche because we never hear nothing. I mean, we're just...
Yeah, you're the left.
Starving.
The left is starving.
Well, no, I can be on the right. I'm a hawk.
Well, see, this is...
Like a hawk of the wind.
Yeah, you can be four...
To the right.
You can be four kinds of people, right? So definitely got to be at least left, right, and center. And what's the fourth?
Sure.
The tetrad. The fourth is...
But you can't cut off the left wing. You can't fly.
Okay, listen, I'm going to give you some information from LaRouche on the Gerald Bull situation. You know Gerald Bull, the Canadian genius who...
Mm-hmm.
I was murdered for involvement with the Iraqi, space gun? Some kind of big gun, you know, that could do something,
mm-hmm.
You know. Okay, listen to these facts from Lyndon LaRouche. Okay, quote.
Okay, now here's a moral dilemma, okay?
Yeah, okay, Mike, okay. Good.
You're going to read something from a piece of paper, okay?
Yeah.
We've got another caller on the line who's been waiting. Now, he'll probably wait, and you'll read all that stuff from the paper.
I can solve it. Caller,
yeah.
We're going to hang up. I'm going to answer your situation, and then we're going to deal with this call. Or maybe the call is more pressing, but I'm going to read you the Rouge thing, and that's all you want on this call anyways.
Yeah, sure.
I'll
talk to you later, Bob.
Yeah, call back later if
we're going to talk about sea vegetation.
Yeah, that's right.
Raptors.
And the D-cell. Okay.
Yeah, see ya.
Okay, thanks. Okay, Mike, great. Good diplomatic work there, Mike. Take the call.
So go to the other call.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Let's see how this works.
Yeah, Mike is a genius on this level. He's a diplomatic man.
Hi.
Hello?
Uh-oh,
it's Sean, the cartoonist.
Hello, Bob.
Yeah.
Oh,
he'll give us those big themes that we won't be able to concentrate anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, wait, what do you have to say, man?
Pardon?
Do you understand my point about the media archetypes assume cartoon proportions?
Yeah.
And that the individual would study Fritjof Capra's Tao of Physics and that kind of yogic manipulation of their body percept as a pastime, as an anesthetic. And therefore, this realization you had at Dobbstown about subsuming your body into cartoon style is not the main work that you're engaged in.
What's the main work that we're engaged in?
Is studying the interplay of the mixed corporate media archetypal mythic structures and their cartoon physics.
So we're looking at the patterns and checking out the cartoons.
Yeah, never...
Like watching the movies, almost.
Well, all the media in the interplay, as expressed through advertising the ratings, is the cartoon effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, do you remember I wrote you a long time ago, and I predicted that Bush's image would be slapstick, right? And that's a sort of just a precursor to the cartoons, right?
Yeah,
slapstick was trying to mime the cartoons.
That's right.
And they were more or less put out of business by the cartoons. They couldn't compete with them.
Yeah, you're a good student of that, Sean.
Yeah, so... So I said Bush would be a slapstick character.
Yeah, you're
on. And the other thing that's kind of funny is this Iraqi super gun. Doesn't that sound like something they build in a cartoon? A big, huge gun to shoot satellites into space with?
Well, according to LaRouche here, they weren't really building that. That was a cover for much other arms dealing.
Oh, what was it for then?
Well, the what do you call the gun?
The Iraqi super gun or something like that?
Yeah.
I think that's what it was called.
The term is, I can't find it, but Anyways, the official purpose was to develop a cannon so powerful that it could launch satellites into orbit ballistically.
That's
what LaRouche says it was, Space Research Corporation. But actually, the firm was always an arms smuggling depot functioning under the sanction of U.S. and British intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Under the cover of his satellite research, Bull developed one of the world's best 155-millimeter howitzers, capable of firing a tactical nuclear warhead 40 miles. The howitzers were sold to Israel, South Africa, and the Shah's Iran in the 70s, in violation of U.S. and Canadian munitions export regulations. That this firm, Space Research, which was originally set up by the Bronfmans, can you believe that, Mike? The firm operated under the joint covert sanction of the U.S. and British-run Canadian governments, because, as shown, it can hardly be contested, this fact, because the firm literally straddled the U.S.-Canadian border near Hightower, Quebec, such that the firm's internal driveway was the only border crossing in the remote area. At various times, the firm's board and officials have included Richard Bissell, the former head of CIA covert operations, General Arthur Trudeau, the former head of U.S. Army Research and Development, General Barksdale Hamlet, the former commander of U.S. forces in West Berlin, former International Atomic Energy Agency Chairman Sterling Cole, and John J. Clancy, Jack Frost, and Rogers Gregory, all former career CIA operatives. Now, that is information from LaRouche, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's in the newspapers. Do you know?
I haven't seen it in the newspapers. I saw bits of it, but they were mainly talking about it as a satellite launching system.
Well, the LaRouche...
Kind of cheap, sort of.
Yeah, LaRouche goes on to say that to aid in Middle East operations, the Bronfmans retained Israeli intelligence operative Shaul Eisenberg, the godfather of the Israel-Iran and Israel-China connection, as the firm's overseas representative. Space Research Corporation negotiated an exclusive contract allowing for Israel to re-export its products to Iran. These arms were shipped by the Israeli intelligence proprietary Zim Shipping, whose Canadian offices were conveniently housed at Space Research Corporation offices. Zim was reportedly later used for the Reagan-Bush deals. Okay, that's LaRouche. That's not us. That's not Sikelan. We don't want to get sued for this, all right?
Yeah.
But this is the kind of information that...
Actually, you know what I think it is? I don't think it's any of that. They're setting up a big circus over there.
Yeah.
It's going to be a circus show, and they're going to shoot a giant cream pie over at Bush. Get him right in the face.
See, you're talking too much slapstick cartoon stylistics there.
But it's a solar theater, and you set up a big circus down in the Middle East there. And everyone does their juggling acts down there. So they're going to shoot, like, the human cannonball, you know. Maybe they'll shoot... what was the guy's name? The Ayatollah out of there. Use him as the human cannonball.
Well, Sean, I don't know what to say. Your taste runs into the kind of corny level of cartoon interpretation.
Keystone Cops.
Yeah, definitely.
Well, you remember,
Pun's
the best medium.
Who?
The pun.
Yeah, pun.
That's how, you know, I started describing, you know, when people go, who's Bob? I don't say Bob's a myth. I say he's a punny sort of guy.
Well, Sean, you know, you're the namesake of the pun man in Finnegan's Wake. It's Sean. Sean the pen man, Sean the pun man.
Yep.
It's your name.
Yeah.
Do you spell it S-E-A-N or S-H-A-W-N?
S-E-A-N.
That's the right way.
Yeah, I know.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, I think the Gerald Bull case is somehow linked into the Iraqi red herring when the AIDS stuff surfaces later this year. They'll start nailing Iraq and Iran for AIDS misdemeanors.
Did you find that out from... your sources?
No, that's my own theory.
Oh, that's your own theory?
Yeah, in other words, you know, that's what I created.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
That's great.
Okay, time to go.
Okay, thanks.
All right. See ya.
Yeah, I mean, you see, again, we got a caller. We lost another caller during that time.
Yes, they're back.
We've got to bombard people, Bob. It's important. We can't lose our dedicated
listeners. No. Jim Patterson complained that we were too aggressive 2 weeks ago. I'm trying to be lax, slack, you know, and just be calm, just for Jim's sake, because it sounds
that's
like
fine.
You
that's
made
fine.
A wonderful tape.
Can't deny the listeners a chance to get through.
Oh, okay. It's their show.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Michael?
Hi, Edward. Hi. Having a bad night tonight. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, I've been trying to think about your role, Michael, in the show.
Me too, a lot lately. I've been losing sleep over it.
Well, yeah, it is getting late in the morning, isn't it? You have to get up for lighting direction, I think, don't you?
No.
But anyway, I try to think what your role on the show, Mike. Like, is it more like Ed McMahon to Johnny Carson? I won't say who is who. Or is it more like... No, it is the church of the subgenus, so someone has to be Moses and someone has to be his brother, Aaron. Or I really think, and this is, I think, the greatest compliment I can pay to the church of the subgenus, Mike, you're George Burns and Bob is Gracie Allen, I think.
That's very nice. That's, I like that analogy.
Bob and Connie, I'm a woman, so I'd be Connie. It fits.
Yeah,
you can be on the next show. Just leave a message at 657-8040, okay, Eddie? Just give your theme for next. We'll give you priority. See, we have another message, another caller. See, they're coming in now, Eddie. Just get back in line, call in again.
Okay. Knock and knock.
Thanks, Eddie.
Thanks, Edward. Okay, let's go again to get another caller.
This is Mike style.
Hi, Bob.
Yeah.
Yo, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
Is Sean again?
Moment.
No.
Doesn't matter who it is. Just let them talk.
Yeah.
Hi, Bob. Sorry, I couldn't hear myself. I had to turn my radio up.
Yeah. Sorry. That's the way it works around here.
How you doing?
Nice.
How many places are you at once?
Mike says five. He held up his hand. Five.
Yeah.
But tactile space has centers everywhere and boundaries nowhere. So I am everywhere and in the same spot.
Yeah.
Therefore, staying put at the same time. It's simultaneous.
That's fantastic. Are you in Dallas, too?
Yes. Yes, I have staying zombified there, propagating the old mythology from the 70s. Therefore, putting more attention on the Toronto operation, which is more resonant right now.
I'm so glad I have your acquaintance. You know, I've really got to express myself there. Can you explain everything? Can you explain Robert Graves?
Oh, yeah. Robert Graves, the white goddess?
Yeah.
That's the very important to the press conference I'll be giving. Well, you know, my sources will be giving on Kent's show if he gives us some time. But Robert Graves... Mike, it just flipped off. Robert Graves pretended to drop out of British intelligence and move to Majorca, therefore setting up the ideology for the oligarchs of Gnostic white goddess worship. The Gaia theme that William Irwin Thompson and Jamie Lovelock propagate now. Now, did you know that it was announced last Saturday in the Global Mail that the satellite readings offered by the World Bank in 1978 about the Amazonian rainforest were wildly off, and that not that many of the Amazonian rainforest were buried and burned?
Slack really is on the way.
Yeah, slack is coming. Now, it's going to be incredible. Yeah, that's a very important thing to keep in mind. Now, the World Bank, why would they do that? Well, because they want to move into this nature worship, earth worship, eco-fascism, where they are demanding wilderness areas of various countries in the third world, including Canada, huge tracts of land that they will take over in swap for the debt that they imposed on these third world countries. So in other words, you're going to have this land worship, this Gnostic preservation of the pagan rituals. Now, Bob is a pagan himself, but I'm comprehensive and can carry many points of view and many roles, and I'm a Catholic, so I'm opposed to the pagan as well as opposed to the Catholic at the same time. But when we tangle in on a question like yours of the significance of Robert Graves, he is waking up the white goddess for the oligarchs to infiltrate the poetry and the cultural Irving Layton spin-offs that TVO imprint tried to impose on Toronto over the past year and failed miserably. I have inside sources at TVO imprint. They told me what's going to happen in the next year. But Paul Williams and these people were terribly embarrassed at what they tried to do by waking up the Gnostic British intelligence controlled through TV Ontario, Robert Graves kind of mythology that Queen Elizabeth and Prince Charles and Di will manifest. In other words, I could go on, right?
Right. That's fantastic. How about going on about the Freemasons for a moment?
Very briefly, we've got a caller on the line.
Yeah, we have another caller. Mike,
that could be a long diatribe, too.
Well, the Freemasons, some of them are left hemisphere, some are right hemisphere. The right hemisphere gang have jumped ship with Robert Graves and are sending money into Eastern Europe. Yes, Freemasons, a faction of them, are working with Robert Graves.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for calling.
All right.
Bye.
Good night.
Yeah.
Robert Graves isn't related to Jim Good luck, Jim Phelps.
Peter Graves?
Yeah.
No?
Let's go to this other call. Yeah, I wanted to make a comment that we're now being broadcast on radio station WMPG in Maine. The show that we played some of their tapes before. They do the Dad's New Slacks show.
Yeah.
And I got this long letter from Michael. I had sent him the sort of just an excerpt from one of the shows and one of the best of tapes. And he very naively says, "Well, have you guys ever heard any of Ivan Stang's shows out of Dallas? You guys should meet him or maybe talk to him." So. Needless to say, I'll eagerly send down the tape of the shout-off you had with Ivan Stang here on CKLM. And that might be worth playing again sometime. Yeah. It's an excerpt or two, just for archival purposes.
April 13th, 1988.
That a long time ago.
Yeah. We have a caller?
Yes. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, Bob, I'm out here with both barrels blazing tonight.
Oh, round four.
Round three, Bob.
Oh, okay. I was fighting three with the boys at Dobstown Food Headquarters on Friday. We're ready for this.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So, here's something for you.
Hey, Dave, don't you think Take Today's an amazing book?
Yeah, it's an incredible book.
It is. You would recommend it to the Subgenius members here in Toronto.
Definitely.
Take Today, The Executive's Dropout, Mulroney's Dropout by Marshall McLuhan and Barry Nevitt.
That's right.
Awesome book.
Yeah. I'm scanning it.
Okay. Let's have your probe.
Okay. The probe today is, you were talking about the Gaia goddess there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, did we get into Dave? See, Dave's you're a devoted member of the White Goddess faction.
Not really.
On weekends.
In the electric age, the Gaia has turned into the Kali goddess. She's been wiped up since 3102 BC when the pharaoh Narmer united Upper and Lower Egypt.
That's right, Dave.
Yeah.
I can agree with that.
Okay. So the theme today, Bob, I was wondering, a lot of times with your callers, you start with their ignorance.
Oh, yeah.
That's your starting point? Well, I was thinking I was going to suggest a new spiritual exercise and new form of yoga, Bob.
I'm willing to take it on, Dave.
Okay. How about starting with your own ignorance?
Oh, yeah, I often do that. I say to Mike, "Shall we go on the air just before the show?" And he says, "I don't know. Got anything to say?" I say, "No." Okay, let's go on.
Okay.
That's our ignorance.
Okay, I was thinking about...
I mean, there's nothing on these papers that we rustle here as pretending we have documents. But we do screen the phone calls.
Good.
We're responsible radio. Okay, what's my ignorance? Propose a particular aspect of it there, Dave.
Okay, I was thinking about... Remember I wrote you a letter a few months back about the creative process moving from the inner to the outer?
Yeah.
So I was thinking about the extensions of man being sort of a natural process... Because in order to express yourself outwardly in any creative, so I know you don't like that word, creative, but in order to...
I like it for you, Dave.
Express
for you,
some sort,
I like it.
Oh, good. To express an outward expression of creativity, you have to go from the inner to the outer.
That's right.
It seems to me to be a natural thing to extend your inner bodies throughout space and time.
That's right. You can make it quicker by saying our outerings are our utterings.
Right. So how does the electric outering change from, say, visual space, written outering?
To electric outering, which is inner space?
Right. Well, it's the same process. If it's, what would mankind be doing if he wasn't extending his various bodies through his technologies is what I'm trying to say. That there are just as great services as there are disservices, and those services and disservices increase with every advancing technology, despite the fact that the content of the new one is the old one.
That's right. There are services and disservices. If you look at the My Perfect Pitch chart, you note that the eighth phase is the second coming. That has positive connotations, and the ground of the second coming is the electric environment, the DV tactility. That's a positive image. You know, that's the point here, Dave.
How can it be a positive image if the human scale gets subsumed?
No,
even though it's being brought back now, right?
Yeah, we've moved into human scale. That's the point. We've moved through thousands of years of evolution in the last 40 years. And that's why people have the survival emotion. They just want to have the emotion of survivorhood. And to have arrived now is a point of celebration for those who are here with us. To have gone through that maelstrom, that vortex of it, of cyclical simultaneity, confusion, surfing, problems, crises, ecstasy, pain, drug addiction, you know, punk rock, you know, you name it, all that stuff.
All those expressions.
Yeah, all those expressions. Then then if you're here today with Bob, then you got power. Power, Dave. And, you know, I know your buddy there is Martin. His name is Martin.
That's right. He refuses to come on the air, even though he has a lot of questions.
And he's tall like you.
That's right. And the way you met him?
No.
Or are you just using your ESP?
I'm using my ESP. He's tall like you. I picked this up when you were on last 2 weeks ago, but I didn't get a chance to express it. He's tall like you. He's subject to mood swings. Not so much...
not so much like me.
Not like you. You're not really like that, but he's more extreme in his mood swings, and people have a problem sometimes dealing with him. But in a basic motive and intention, which never is accomplished under electric conditions, but in basic intention, he is a subgenius. And I welcome aboard.
Good.
Okay, now your question is not clear. You want to know how the electric environment utters, or what it utters?
Well, it seems to me that the whole... basic ground is not so much the artist perceiving the effects of his actions, but that the process is more important, and that what he's visualizing or seeing inwardly is being manifested outwardly.
Say that a little slower.
To quote Paul Twitchell, he says that soul's greatest desire is to express itself in form.
Yeah.
So in order to do something creative, in order to make an impression or communicate anything, you have to outer one or more of your inner bodies outwardly, has to be mirrored or reflected into these worlds.
Yeah.
So Marshall McLuhan, like, it sort of seems like he's trying to make some stupendous statement by saying that we are extending our central nervous system, but I see it as it's all a matter of what you're expressing. But he doesn't assume that there's any content involved at all. But
Dave, the content is the user, is the personal expression.
No, but you're trying to remind another person, and whatever your artistic expression is, you're reminding them of some sort of higher reality, or trying to inspire them to make their own expression.
We have an artist here who just chuckled at that, Dave. Maybe you should...
Well, I'm an artist, too, and you can take anybody from Keith Jarrett to Mozart to Miles Davis and Gustav Holst, and they will all acknowledge that their inspiration comes from higher centers, higher spiritual centers.
You see, Dave, I agree with you, but the thing is, you find that Marshall doesn't say that.
Marshall doesn't say that?
That's your problem here? I mean, it's not hard to agree with you, Dave. It's pretty sentimental what you're saying. It's human sense. It's common sense.
Well, to me, like some of what Marshall's saying seems to me to be common sense.
Okay, don't you know that Marshall was a Manipian satirist?
No, I guess so.
Yeah, see, this is what you need. See, you got to get a hold of his PhD thesis, because he laid out his style of expression in his PhD thesis. Came out in 1943.
Oh, he said that he was satire and he was trying to provoke his... audience.
He hoiked up Thomas Nash, a pamphleteer, writer in Elizabethan England, as his figure for the ancient tradition of Manipian satire. All right?
Okay.
And he explained Thomas Nash in his thesis. He then followed that pattern once he infiltrated what he called, quote, decent society by getting his PhD tenure, or getting his tenure at the University of Toronto in 52, the year Harold Innes died. He then had tenure so he could set up his center, and he went muck wild in 1953 and began his operation of Manipian satire. Everything that he wrote had nothing to do with him personally. It was a corporate miming of the fact that our own technological environments had reached the point of doing a Manipian satire on us as utterings of us. Our environments did a Manipian satire on us, and then Marshall mimed that. But if you knew him personally, he was not involved in what he said.
Okay, one more question.
But does that help? But you know.
Yeah, that helps a lot.
Okay, good.
Okay, Bob. If it's possible to perceive these environments, I still wonder, even though I'm a political dummy here, Bob.
That's a good strategy, Dave. The ground shifted. You're perfectly appropriate right now.
Why it's so important?
You're not a dummy anymore, Dave. You're right. Your strategy applies.
Moment.
Yeah, at this
at
next
this
couple of months,
moment.
Your strategy works. Didn't work several months ago.
Well, I'm wondering why you're, like, basically, since you've been on the air, you've been hoiking out McLuhan and LaRouche and Beter and these people, and that doesn't seem to change.
Well, it can change if the audience
catches up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so why is it so important to wake up all these figures that are marching across the solar global theater stage that are basically just agents of the Kalner engine, and they're kind of, they don't understand, but they're corporate figures?
Who, the holy offices?
No, people like the Reichmans and Rockefellers and...
Why wake them up?
Yeah, like why speak about them if they're just figures?
To get attention. See, we had to wake up Bob Marshall to get attention, all right?
Okay.
And then we had to turn Bob Marshall into...
But those people already have attention, though, some form of attention.
No, not this way.
Like exposing them?
Yeah, if you want to call it that. I don't think we exposed them in a way that that manipulated and molded the opinions of...
Well, those images and those people don't affect me, right?
That's right. They don't. But what does? I affect you, Dave.
Yeah,
I affect
true.
You. And if you're willing to dialogue with me beyond the holy offices, I'm ready.
Let's see. We tried to wake up some Mekankar and all that last week.
Yeah, but I want to see how you can communicate with me without reference to the holy offices.
Well, the whole idea that I'm trying to say is that the process of expressing some sort of, I don't want to get caught in this cliche idea of like spiritual, but some sort of, to me, anything that's perceptive or comprehensive relates to spirituality.
Well, would you go to bed with me?
I don't think so, Bob.
Why not?
Well, I go to bed with you in the discarnate state.
All right.
That's just enough.
Yeah, but what about a physical? Why don't we privately meet and exchange spiritual juices?
I don't understand the context of the question.
Well, I want to move it beyond these holy offices. So, you know, I'm trying to have a personal relationship with you, Dave.
Well, the holy offices, it's like it's bottlenecked in the mental world.
Well,
the holy orphanage.
Again, you're criticizing. I'm offering you a way out of your dilemma here. You're enraptured with me. I'm giving you an opportunity to get more involved with me. As our, my guests, you could just call it the holy orifices. We go from the holy offices to the holy orifices.
How many of them are there, Bob?
How many are there? Okay, so Dave, I'll leave you with that. There's the proposal, Dave, to get more personal. You know,
might have been out it out.
Zim zum, as Ginsberg would say.
Holy cow.
Mike, are you signaling we have another call?
Woo!
We have another call, Dave. But that's what I'm offering you. You know, to get past this discarnate problem you have with me.
Oh, I think I'll take a pass on that one tonight, Bob.
Okay.
Okay.
Send Martin then.
Send Martin next time.
Thanks.
Okay.
Busting doesn't hurt either.
Okay, there we are. So, don't you like this intensity?
Yeah,
a little more
I do, Mike. Yes, yeah. Anyway. Mike knows what he's doing.
So let's call this the last call, I guess, because it's
I don't like
to two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well,
hi, Kellen.
Hi, Mike. This is Green Ray calling again. I'm wondering.
You want to go to bed with me too, baby?
So, like, the question is, why is the Eastern Bloc going to give us the radionics equipment? Because we need more healing.
Yeah, see, this is the guy who plays the radionics music, right? What do you call your music you put over the air sometime? You've done
radiosthesia.
Yeah, right. Not synesthesia, radiosthesia. You want to know when they're going to give us that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
When I tell them to, you know that.
Okay, well.
What?
Do it soon.
Why?
Because,
you got investments in it?
Could.
Yeah, you could. You've got a...
Could. I have the option.
You have
an investment.
You have a belief structure that's invested in it, right?
Well, completely. Never completely.
Good, good, good.
Because there's always shamanism, which is just walking through the woods.
Yeah. Yeah, do you know what the new woods is?
The electric woods.
That'd be obvious, wouldn't it? So I can't mean that.
There's a lot of woods.
Do you remember I said the ground? I said to Dave just a minute ago, the ground shifted.
The woods are up on Manitouan Island, the Indians.
No. It's something like a kankar, soul travel.
Oh, wow.
You know,
galactic woods, you mean?
Yeah, the intergalactic. The many mansions of Jesus Christ are for.
Yeah, okay. That body just popped in for a second.
Yeah. If we can do that, then we could get a job. With a galactic experience,
with the galactic beings.
Could you have a job? Or a role? I think it's both. You're right. Dave, this guy, he's silly, but he's a good caller. He pays attention. He has the right answers, the right percepts.
Mm-hmm. Hope he works better with his role.
But what are we trying to...
I've got touch fatigue, so, you know, my clarity is coming back to me.
Yeah, yeah. It's more clarity you're expressing. Are you being an artist right now and expressing yourself?
Artist?
Yeah.
You're on the strike, right?
You're on strike.
Yeah.
You're on strike.
What
do you think? You have a certain atmosphere in your vocal tones. I think you'd have an interesting opinion about Dave, our previous caller. What do you make of his questions or approach that he takes towards Bob?
Well...
You can be honest, because we don't know who you are.
He's trying too hard to...
Yeah.
...match his interpersonal reality with yours.
Right, right. Yeah, he doesn't know how to jam... That's what his problem.
But, I mean, you can read and read and read and read, but use your intuition, Dave. That's from the violet ray.
Yeah. Is that
your radionics.
Are you Ray?
Tensley. Read your radionics. Go to Fifth Kingdom, Dave.
Read Tensley?
Tensley. David Tansley, T-A-N-S-L-E-Y.
That would be right up David's spiritual outlook.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's looking for that spirit. That's a spiritual version of electricity.
And get tuned in.
Okay. Yeah. And your name is Ray? No.
Well, I'm from the Green Ray.
I see. I got you.
But I'll tell you back soon, Bob.
Oh, thanks, Ray.
You'll be in tonight.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay.
Yeah.
See ya.
Good luck. Oh,
nice new caller.
Yeah.
And then on this, you see... Another example, I hear a caller giving advice to another caller.
Yes, that was new. I created that. I brought that up, right?
Yeah.
I made that.
Do you get a royalty from that?
We can. No, they do. I mean, they become kind of Bobby.
Yeah.
Oh, we'll get another caller.
Yeah, we'll go to the
school. Yay, Mikey.
Keep it going. What was I going to say? That offer to sleep with Dave, does that apply to other callers, or is that a specific invitation to Dave?
Only when they get to that problem, that level of intensity that Dave has.
Yeah.
I don't think it's necessary to sleep with me if you don't have that problem. But in Dave's case, I think he needs a personal massage.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So, let's go to this call.
Okay, Mike.
Hi.
Hello, Bob.
Oh, double. We're going to be out until 3 o'clock.
Yeah, I'm going home.
I don't have much to say, but I am here.
Yeah, great.
Listen, I wanted to ask you two things. Did you ever hear that when the astronauts landed on the moon, there was flying saucers on the opposite rim of the crater?
Oh, yeah, that's a very old story, and some of my church members helped disseminate that.
Well, do you think it's factual?
Yeah.
Well, then, what do you think if they get fusion power out in 6 months, like you say?
No, in June they will announce it. It will be becoming an environment within 5 years.
Well, didn't that professor at U of T, Polanyi, say that it was impossible? And he was a chemist, so he ought to know.
And there were 100 universities who tried to duplicate the experiment and generally failed.
Yeah, but didn't he take the trouble to really speak out against it?
Yeah, and that's because Toronto is oligarchically controlled, isn't it?
Well, I was reading Marshall McLuhan's letters the other day.
Did you go buy the book, or do you already have it?
No, I got it from the library.
Congratulations. You hear that, Mike? Mike made it. Yeah, that's excellent work, Dublin. I'll tell you, read the letter June 22nd, 1951. It's about page 226. That's a very important letter that Marshall wrote to Ezra Pound. It lays out his whole strategy. All right?
I scanned it. I didn't read much of the Pound. What was it?
June 22nd, 1951.
I don't have the book anymore.
What's the gist of it? He explains his strategy, which was that he would try to distract the trigger men, and in the 70s he called Henry Kissinger the main trigger man of the 70s. He said he would try to distract the trigger men by creating a diversion on the sidelines, and at the same time he would also try to needle the somnambulists. So he was pointing his artistic expression goals at the top-down guys, the trigger men, and the bottom-up guys, the somnambulists.
Well, he wrote a letter to Polanyi, and he said that he didn't necessarily agree with him on the uselessness of modern military manuals, which I thought was a kind of a neat put-down.
Yeah, on the uselessness.
That's right. He said he didn't necessarily I'm paraphrasing here, didn't necessarily share his views on the uselessness of modern military manuals.
Had Polanyi...
evidently.
Yeah.
Had put down modern military manuals like Gwyn Dyer.
See, you see the satirical element in McLuhan? Do you know that the Second City and the Saturday Night Live sensibility came out of the McLuhan Center for Culture and Technology? Any hip critics know that Marshall was a lot funnier than Dan Aykroyd and Belushi, and those people picked up the sensibility here in Toronto from Marshall. Marshall was a big hidden ground in the Canadian humor profile that dominated the late 70s, early 80s.
Oh, I wouldn't doubt that.
Yeah.
But if cold fusion is proven to be a fact, do we get rid of the political opinions of the people who are against it, as well as getting the technology?
Yeah.
And then, if cold fusion is a fact, so neat, and if the flying saucers really are out there...
Yeah.
Really, really are out
yeah.
there, and if most of what's been written about them is possibly true...
Oh, you didn't hear my show. We made contact with extraterrestrials on June 2nd, 1989, in Mongolia. That will be the historical beginning point that happened.
Well, they said that at one of the Air Force bases in 1959, they sent for a DNA expert to do what they called histonic analysis. What they mean by that, histonic refers to the genetic material in each cell, right?
Yeah.
And he was supposed to weigh it. And I personally, that would be on the presumption that they were human, right?
Yeah.
He said the figures were way too low. Well, first I thought that meant they were androids, just making do with a little bit of DNA, right?
Yeah.
But that doesn't follow, because the amount of DNA you've got has got nothing to do with complexity.
Yeah.
Some insects have got more than we have, and some bigger animals have got less, and so on. But what I thought later was, if that's really true, and if there are extraterrestrials, and if they've got DNA, the implications of that... are that we are already extraterrestrial on the physical level.
That's right, yeah. The extraterrestrials are ourselves in the future.
I don't know about that. But what I mean is, the fact that they've got DNA like us is a lot more of a state secret than the fact that they've got an advanced electromagnetic method of propulsion, if you understand what I'm saying. Like, as far as scaring the population of the Earth is concerned, causing panic, overturning our ideas... the fact that they're physically related to us means that they're either androids or...